Log Talk Radio.
On the Edge, real talk about real issues.
Welcome to the On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends. I'm your host, Katie Barnett. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It's hump day. We've gotten to the middle of our work week, our school week. We're going to thank God for another day of being here, another chance to get together and discuss our important issues. Okay, to Barry Mason, formerly of 98.7 KISS FM Radio, currently with iSoulRadio.com. You can hear Barry do his thing on Saturdays from 7 to 10 p.m. Again on Sundays from 6 to 10 p.m. When he's not doing that, he is gracing New York with the best of live R&B events, and he is doing it in the best of venues. So I want to thank him for all that he has done up to this point, from commercials to audio to consultations to just mere moral and physical support. Barry, you are the bomb. So thank you very much to my team, Lady Diamond, Elaine Yevitz, slowly making her way back to Monster Miles, to DJ Domeka, Rodney Williams, and also to our wonderful activist and panelist, Deacon Zeddy Williams. Thank you guys for being the most marvelous team a girl could have, on and off the air. To my social media groups, On the Edge Listeners Lounge, you guys rock. To the Black Love and Conversations group, to the Black History Suppressed group, Real World Black Prison Discussion, What About Us, and the Capitalist End groups, thank you very much for all of your pre-broadcast topic participation, and to all of you for my Facebook personal network that has been supportive all the way through, thank you all very much. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to be touching on a very important subject, not that any of the other show topics that we've had hasn't been, but you all know that I mainly have a big drive to keep our youth together. And once again, we have yet another organization, or I should say this organization is back under fire in terms of failing our children once again, and that is the public school system. Tonight, I'm going to be bringing you some common complaints, sort of nationwide, but as well as personal things that took place where I feel it needs to be addressed, and I'm sure a lot of you parents out there are suffering with the same issue and maybe haven't decided where you can turn to file a complaint. I also want to let all of you know tonight just how important, with tonight's subject being on the panel, it is for you to get down to your PTA meetings, to your congressmen, to your district leaders, everyone that you can think of, and get started. Your child's education, their future, their well-being, their social status, all of this is in effect tonight. Now, the subject tonight is the dumbing down of public school children. We are going to be speaking from particularly those of you who are in this time of the year. Most of you have gone to your parent-teacher conferences, and you have noticed that your teacher has a different story from what you know of your child. And I'm going to let you know that more than likely, it's not your child. It's what the school is up to. So that will be what we discuss tonight. So tonight, I'm going to be going out with a Bee Gees classic, Nights on Broadway. When I get back, after the word from our sponsors, we're going to get this party going. Okay, so be right back after this.
We'll be right back.
New York, New York. There's no place like it. You figure that out when you find yourself in a bit of trouble while vacationing or visiting in Florida. And Florida cops are sure as heck not like New York City cops. You're feeling more than put out or simply just confused with it all. But you want justice. You need it to be right, and you want someone who understands where you're coming from. You need Kenneth Foote, attorney at law. Graduate of St. John's University and Florida Stetson University, he'll make sure you're back on track and everything's straightened away. Driving violations, personal injury, drug charges, he's here to work with you as well as for you. Leave nothing to chance. K.L. Foote, attorneys at law, 877-90-FOOTE or klfoote.com. Kenneth Foote, the New Yorker to contact in Florida.
The On the Edge Show with Katie Barnett and friends, the show that gives you real talk about real issues, needs your help. Katie and the gang are seeking out individuals and local business sponsors to help fund their projects for youth and minority communities to become re-empowered, featuring programs like the Spread Your Wings Showcase, offering free advertising to up-and-coming entrepreneurs, Youth Day giving public school grades 4 to 12 a taste of the arts, and All Hands on Deck, our new writer's showcase. On the Edge is looking to give back to our communities by giving our youth a future. Your small contribution will make a difference. Individuals or small businesses can choose to be a sponsor for any amount of time. And businesses can also choose to advertise with us at very reasonable rates. Choose any type of show sponsorship, and you just may be a sponsor for a life. Visit us at Facebook at facebook.com On the Edge Show for more information on how you can be a part of our vision. We hope to see you there.
You're listening to On the Edge.
Welcome back, everybody, to the On the Edge show with Katie Barnett and friends. You know what that last song meant. Knicks, you rock, you beat out the Celtics in their hometown, 116-92. You go, Knicks. Go, New York. It's time for that break. All right, ladies and gentlemen, now it's time to get serious. We are going to put the public school system under fire tonight, and here is the problem. I've been getting so many complaints and grumbling from parents all over my community. I've gotten complaints via post, people asking me to say things. As you know, we had a previous segment about this, and tonight is no exception. Now, after hearing all the parents talking and everything where we actually addressed it here in New York City on the air, I have now gotten to see a few things. Our children are struggling in school. Our children seem to be going down, and most of us have been attributing this to just a mutation of the youth. The youth are not interested. That is not the case. Ladies and gentlemen, upon entering a parent-teacher conference yesterday in my own children's school and seeing the work from another school and a parent brought me to from their first grader, this is what you need to know. The public school systems have been in the news lately for many things. Between, we had an issue with an Oklahoma school, if I'm not mistaken, where there were armed commandos that they want to put in place now to sort of police the schools because, you know, now they're pegging our children to be these horrible, from the two shootings that took place in the two separate schools, which we all know were tragic. There are other schools that we just spoke about, and those of you listening to my news clip on the other station has heard that there's been sexual harassment claims that have gone unreported by two high officials up there based on the fact that one principal simply said she forgot about it. After she tried once to reach the boys that were accused, parents, well, you know what, just I can clearly see how that can happen. She just totally forgot to make a call to parents when there were repeated reports of sexual abuse and harassment. Okay, then we are talking about gang activity. We're talking about Avante Okendo. All of you know him, the Queens autistic boy that got to walk out of a school, and he's autistic, and he now is no longer with us. So all of these things are under public schools and special needs schools and things to that effect where we send our children because the states say that it's mandatory we send them to a facility. We've been taught forever that education is the way to go. We're counting on these officials and these facilitators to give our children an education because, you know, once we've taught them their ABCs, their 1-2-3s, their yes and no's and please and thank yous, we give them off to the people who are certified to teach them more professionally, more above our realm. And then we are the parents that help the teachers along. At least that's what we should be doing. Well, now, after the safety problems have been an issue, now they're failing our children in the one primary function they have, and that is education. Here's what they're doing. We're going to really specifically target the younger elementary school children, pre-K through first grade. Now, we all know what pre-K and kindergarten means. That's where they do all the laughing, the arts, the clapping, the songs, and they're learning for the first time everything past what we've taught them after they walked. And then kindergarten gets a little bit more serious, but there's still a lot more play and a lot more arts and crafts and everything. First grade gets a little more serious than that. However, they're still learning how to write their names properly. They're still learning the importance of writing on a line. Now, here's the problem. When your children are being given curriculum that is not designed for their age group whatsoever, and they're being told in school that this is what they are being graded on, this is what their permanent records are going to say based on whether or not they can meet up to the criteria of this high advanced curriculum. Don't get me wrong, ladies and gentlemen. For anyone whose child is able to get over the basics, I fully expect a teacher to take them to the next level, whether they are in a certain grade or not. It'll be up to the parent to decide whether they should get skipped or not if parents and teachers both feel that that would be better for them. But when they are learning and what they are required to meet, the criteria that they are required to meet should not be something they haven't even learned yet. They should not be mandated to know, understand, be able to comprehensively write or meet or read anything that's not made for them. And then on top of that, this particular school district was giving parents, sending home age-appropriate homework, fooling the parents into believing that that's what these children are learning in the classroom and that what you're helping them with at night is what they're being graded on. However, when you go to the parent-teachers conference and they give you this beautiful folder showing your child's progress and improvement or lack thereof from when they first arrived in the class, you're seeing readers that belong to fourth grade and fifth grade for your first grader. And then you're seeing marks where children in first grade are being taken actual points off of their grade, their permanent record, their level progress criteria, for their name not being capitalized, which should not be a penalty. It should be a correction. There should be a red mark there to show the child that this is the way you do it next time in first grade. It is not for you to say 2 points comes off your grade. Now, if your child is what, at least in my district, there's four levels. There's level 1, 2, 3, and 4. Level 1, meaning that the child is not at the appropriate expected standards that they should be at their age. Number 2 is they're there, but they still need more improvement in areas that they should already know. Level 3 is they're doing pretty good, and there's still a few things to go, but they're really there. And level 4 means they're excelling. So if your job is really a level 3, but based on this high curriculum that belongs nowhere in that age group, they're not meeting this. They're struggling. They're confused with it. They're getting points taken off to push them into a level that they don't belong. Now, we all know that public school is funded by state funding. So my belief is that they are deliberately doing this so that they can continue to report to the state, or the district can report to the government stating that these children are in need and we need the funding. And if that's the case, ladies and gentlemen, your children are in the process of having their entire future knocked the hell down because somebody wants to play money games using your child's head count to do it. Parents, you need to be up and aware. You need to be at the place that your voice is heard and counted, and that's in your parent-teacher association meetings. You need, if you can't make the meetings, because I understand sometimes these mandated meetings are, they have a set night and a set time mandated by the chancellor's regulations, and if you can't make it, you better be damn sure to be there the next day to ask the PTA president what just took place. Because they're sending one thing home, but they're grading and putting these children through another in the classroom. First graders in the particular school that I'm dealing with are being required to read E.B. White's, let me get the name of this book. E.B. White, which, before I even get to the specific title, every single one of you know that E.B. White is an author that writes for older, younger children. Okay, what I mean by that is they write for fourth graders and up. That is the type of books and literature that fourth graders can read comprehensively, even if they're struggling with reading and understand the concept of the story. That's not what a sixth grader would know. There was another book that was there dealing with accounting for six-year-olds. Accounting, but not on a six-year-old level. They're not saying Jack has, you know, three checks that they wrote this month, how many would they? No, they're coming up with words like government, words like variety, words like, which for some kids that's perfectly okay, depending on what kind of learning adaptation that they have. No problem. But for an average child, that's not words that they'll use. You don't hear six-year-olds walking around saying, I have a variety of dolls and toys. If you ask them to spell, some of them will get a word wrong or they'll write it the way they believe it's said. They go by what they hear. So this first grade is still that little training and conditioning ground. Where does a school get off, or a government get off, or a district get off putting this type of high standards that's way too high for any kid to jump as a mandated requirement to meet? And in addition to that, then they have the promote by state, annual state test scores only method, meaning that if your child is excelling and meeting all these hurdles and hoops, okay, they are going to have everything they've done all year, excelled with all year, nullified if they freeze up on a test at the end of the year. They can be A-plus children, but something about tests frees them, and the only way that they'll get promoted or be deemed promotable is if they pass these standardized tests. And the standardized test is based on whose standards? Based on whose standards? So we are dealing with failure. We are dealing with issues that no way, no how our children should be subjected to. And now I also want to add this on. This is not on the teachers. This is not on the teachers. The teachers are forced to deal with what the state is handing them down to teach these children. The teachers' jobs are in jeopardy if they don't allow your children to go through this, if they don't mandate that your children go through this. They have all these teaching aid learners now appointed by the state that is helping the teachers grade your children's in-class work, and based on things that the children should not be penalized for, they're getting grade points taken off, putting your child in a lower level than they are supposed to be in. If your parents don't like what you see, the place for you to go is your PTA meetings. The place for you to go is to your town hall councilman. The place for you to go is to your chancellor, your school chancellor, and then the mayor. And you let them know that this is not something that you want to deal with. I've seen frustrated teachers. I've seen frustrated educators. I've seen pissed off parents. I see children coming home frustrated because they think they're dumb when they know the work. And if you're there to help them succeed, why are they coming home feeling worse in your classroom than they feel being bullied on the street in the schoolyard? That is a problem. That is a problem. That is a big problem. Your job, your primary function is to help children excel in education and academics, which in turn leads to social growth. If you are failing in your only and your first and primary function, you're failing them everywhere else with all of the residual things that go along with it. You're giving them nothing but a setup for failure. And as a parent, definitely not going to be something I'm going to lay back and take. And the name of the book that these first graders were being forced to read is called Crows and Piles of Corns by E.B. White. First of all, it's a chapter book. Second of all, it's a book that has higher up vocabulary. Not saying that by all means, if you care to give your child an extra challenge to help their mind go, nothing wrong with that. But that should not be required reading or mandatory reading that their promotional criteria is based on. I see that we have a couple of panelists that like to get in, so let me bring them in and let's get the discussion started. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Good evening, Lady Barnett, and blessings to all the rest of the panel and all the listeners out there.
Yes, greetings to you and welcome, Deacon. Deacon, what is your spin on this subject?
It just goes back to my point when we had this discussion about public schools, and not just in New York City. We have to talk about the schools throughout the nation. And excuse me, some of the criteria that they put on some of these kids are outrageous, especially in the age group which you're talking about. And it's the mandates that they put on this book that you're talking about, it's crazy. How can you force these, what you say, six-year-olds?
Yes, six-year-olds.
Come on. And I saw the example that you gave. I was on the computer and I was looking at it. I was like, this is really crazy. I mean, it doesn't make sense to me. And it goes back to what I say is that we as parents with our children, we have to start putting our foot down on certain situations when it comes to our kids. First of all, before they even get to the schools, we have to make sure that they have a solid foundation of learning, because they get the basic start at home. And if the parents are responsible enough to make sure that they can basically, when they get to the schools, they basically know the reading and writing and maybe some arithmetic. So that falls on us. But as far as the schools making decisions on whether our children are to be passed on certain things, it should be the parents be involved in it also and pass judgment on whether it should be correct or not to be taught in the schools that way or be excuse me, or be mandated that they have to get a certain score on a certain test. It's crazy.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. This particular system and this method of operation that they have going on is setting our children up to fail before the children even step in the classrooms. And like I said, this is not just in New York, sir. You're absolutely right. That I've gotten posts and letters from parents all over the U.S. right now in public schools, because privately funded schools, the parents know they're putting money out and they're definitely going to have a voice. The whole thing is, I'm not going to allow my child to be failed on And at the same time, this is the same people who turn around and get involved in a parent's business if the child is late or the child is
mm-hmm.
is absent. And the whole thing
right.
is, they, at the end of the day, they're up in their lofty little perches in their corporate worlds. They don't know what this is doing to the children. And frankly, they can't make a blanket statement based on some numbers that's punched out and by some computer to make an administrative decision for my child.
Right.
If children are leaving right. the classrooms more frustrated, they're throwing their books down, they're mad as ever because they know this and they feel stupid because they're being given something they never should have been introduced to yet.
Right.
Whose fault is that? It's not for these people, these educators, these people to help our children progress, make them feel hindered. And we're talking,
right.
there are frustrated teachers out there who care about the children succeeding, who want to see them understand basic mistakes and move on and do it right the next time. Because only
right.
by mistakes can you learn to do it right. This is a horrible situation. And all of you parents that are out there listening, this is a time where you do not just throw away that PTA notice. You get up there and you have a voice. You pop up at your child's school and you demand from these teachers to see what your child is learning. Because I'm letting you know right now that there's a particular school that is sending home age-appropriate, what I call now cover story, or cover-up homework where you believe, yeah, they should know this. This is what they should be learning. For example, one parent had a first grader, which is what you saw me post, Deacon, where what the parents see is Pam likes to read a book. The rabbit jumps over the fence. And then they're going to school and they're reading E.B. White. Are you kidding me? And then these people inside the classrooms are telling these children that if they are telling you that they should know this, they should not know this. They're getting red marks and -2 points off because they didn't put a capital on their first name. That's when you teach them that capitals are necessary in the first grade. By second grade, penalties should be imposed. By the age of 7 or 8, they should know that proper names have capitals.
Mm-hmm.
That pronouns exist, that adjectives, you know, describe nouns, that adverbs describe a verb. So as far as that is concerned, I would be a little less upset if this was a second grader.
Right.
And a second grader that's kind of going into midterm by now. But then
mm-hmm.
in addition to this garbage, all they're doing now, and as a matter of fact, there are three articles. One, where an actual teacher whose own son, that where she's not teaching, okay, is a smart, advanced student, and the curriculum he was given in his grade was not proper, that this her son was coming home upset, throwing his books down, feeling frustrated, don't want to speak. Internally, he doesn't want to be bothered because he's feeling stupid. So she wrote a letter to a teacher, the commissioner of New York, and said she's played the game for the past 2 years. She's an educator. She's created a teacher portfolio with enough evidence to prove that she's doing her job over the course of the school year. She's testing her students based on material they haven't even learned yet in September. And then on top of that, the creative sense of teaching, the creative association with the doing things children can learn with by fun or by confidence has been taken out because now they're having these children just learn. They're teaching to testing. They're not teaching for social skills and for life skills. They're teaching these children how to test properly. From standardized tests that completely differ from what the actual classroom curriculum is teaching them. They're wording things in a way that no practice test ever has. They're giving these children main ideas to stories that they can barely understand the literature words from.
It's just an outright blatant way of setting these children up to fail. And it's not just with the younger age group. It's even with the junior high and the high school kids because you have students that are going to school and they're getting, you know, good grades and their regular curriculum in the classrooms every day. They're passing the tests that they take daily. And then all of a sudden you want to throw some other work at them when they get ready to graduate, some other tests at them that they've never even seen. It's the same thing.
Absolutely. You tell me what child knows the word, you know, rapport. What child understands a damn thing about accounting? And panelists, I see you there. I'll be bringing you in just a second. You tell me that. Now, if there's a teacher who's been teaching for years that has two of her own kids, one of them struggled with this thing, but somehow, some way, he managed to bring himself out of it. But then she has a younger son who's struggling, even though that child is a level four, if that can be associated to all of you, which is pretty much like being an A student, okay? He understands more than just the basics. He's pretty much okay with advanced curriculum. But advanced curriculum means something that's maybe a grade ahead. Four grades ahead? Absolutely not. You're given third grade or seventh grade work. And like I said, I understand the challenging of the mind situation. I get it. I do it to my own children to keep them flowing, to help them think. When things start to get too boring for a child, they too can fail that way. But if an educator is pissed off enough to write to her superiors and risk her being called the troublemaker because she's upset with the fact that her own children are failing because the same system she teaches for is failing her children in another facility, something has to be done. Parents, take note. Believe it or not, your voice is what stands above the New York State, whatever. Because if that wasn't true, Parent Teacher Association would have to abide by school regulations when they're having their meetings. And they are a separate entity while a whole one. Parents are allowed to say and do whatever it is they feel like doing in their own meeting when it comes down to having a collective goal at the end of the meeting. Something that the principals can't touch, that the school officials can't touch, and the chancellor herself or himself can't come in and interfere with. They have to be invited. Now imagine that type of power. And this is your child, not theirs. It's their student. It's your child. I'm telling you that I'm looking into homeschooling, and it's ridiculous. And on top of that, in addition to all of the new things society is facing with these children, or these children are facing in society, rather, and the fact that half of these beacons that we've had in place to support the children when all other things fail, being closed up, dried up, or cut off, and teachers that are designed and staff and facility members that are designed to be that extra protection when the parents drop them off and say, okay, have a good day, honey. Failing miserably in their job to the point of fatalities even. There is something to be said that in addition to all of that, then these children have to freeze up and be worried that they're not going to pass some computer grade test that differs greatly from what they've learned in school, from however their instructors have taught them, and whatever it is that they saw for themselves in black and white. Let me bring in our other panelists so that they can have their say.
Okay.
Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Hey, how's it going? It's Carlos Olabi Jones, also known as Thalo Jenkins.
Hey, Thalo. Hey, Juan. There's two more
What's
people
up, Thalo, man? Bless you, bro.
Bless you, too, okay. Brother. Bless you, too, and bless everybody else.
All right.
Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Good evening, Lady Barnett panel. This is Professor Carl Tone Jones, and I'm from Philadelphia.
All right.
Welcome. Okay, hold
all
on.
All right, welcome. Bless you, Professor.
Bless you, too, brother.
Welcome to the show, Cole. You're on the air.
Hello, this is Bianchi calling in. How are you today?
Hello, Bianchi. All right,
Stalo,
you
have a question. Hey, how you doing?
Okay, Stalo, you're left.
Yes, I'll say it. I mean, we know the public school systems are failing, okay? And what we can tell from a lot of the things that's happened, we can tell that they villainize and they stigma children, and specific children at that, many different children. You know, all of the children are susceptible to this violence because this is a structural violence now we're talking about. They've created something that was developed. Now, standardized testing, let's just think about the standardized testing craze and what have you. This was something that scholars sat down, studied testing and assessing children's minds. And it was something that was developed as a tool to help teach and help teaching methods and help to aid the teacher in the best way to reach a child the best way to teach them. This is what it was created for. But then it's been manipulated, and now it's been applied for purposes of profit, for categorizing, for grouping our children, you know, and putting them on pipelines and pathways to destruction. Now, grant funding can be evil. I'll tell you, I'll give you one example. Today, there's a grant program that, you know, my occupation, we partner with them. However, there's a catch to how the funding was even released to the public. The way it was released, right, is that people have to test at a certain level to get this grant funding for free training, right? Now, but if you test too high, you don't get it. You must test low enough, but you can't test too low either. Ain't that crazy? So it's all being used all to release what? Dollar bills. That's all it's about. Releasing dollar bills, making sure it gets to who they want it to get to, and the surplus is going into whose pocket it needs to go to. Now, the whole concept of teaching, you know, was affected by all this betrayal of intelligence and IQ and people being born smarter than the next person and this and that, all of which are false. How can intelligence exist when all babies are geniuses? How is that possible? Now, we know that all children can be reached. Now, we have extreme circumstances, and by this time public schools have, you know, supposedly developed and evolved, we should be doing a much better job, but they're not doing the job because they're not here to teach. They're here to profit at this moment. At this moment. You know, do we have some good teachers? We have some people that are using, you know, what resources they do have, but the resources are being snatched from under them and being replaced with, okay, standardized testing was created to what? To debunk traditional testing and the way traditional testing was marginalizing certain students and causing many of them not to be educated. So then they came out with standardized testing and these new testing methods and all this different stuff right now. But now we're going to reapply that the same way we were doing with the standard test, with the traditional test. They're just using it the same way when it was supposed to be used for something good. Now, this is why I'm trying to show a line where you got people that really care, okay, that's developing these structural models for these children to reach the children. But then you got to get into the hands of these people who have no care. These people who's always making the decisions. Now, you know, like Katie said, the power is in numbers, and the power is in our hands to get the kids out of these schools or get these schools in order. I can't believe what I just heard. I mean, a first grader getting a sixth grade work, and how are you marking children in first grade? You don't grade them then. You don't really grade them and categorize them and do all this in DC CAS. You know, that's one of the tests that my kids in my program, in my academic reinforcement program, they're scared about. It's coming up in like 2 weeks, the DC CAS. They're afraid of this test, honestly. You know, and these people, and the children are going through things that, you know, you and I don't perceive unless we're right there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I am all for higher education. I am all for supporting teachers. And like I said, ladies and gentlemen, I am not putting not one teacher in on this. Not one. And I'm not talking about ones that we might find that, you know, we've had problems with. Because in this respect, this is not the teachers. I've seen more frustrated teachers that equal the frustrated parents than I have seen ever before. And these are teachers that, especially in this school that my children attend, this is one of the last of the standing, you know, arts are still in place. Sports, all of these things, they're still in place. Despite all the budget cuts, despite all of the opposition, they still are making this happen. The state championship of young elementary sports team and the whole nine, they have gospel choirs that go out and compete and come back. They have Pride, run by an African-American female principal who's walking the halls more than you'll ever see in her office. Okay,
and those,
so I'm going to let you know, I'm sorry, Salo, I'm going to let you know that I'm not putting this on any of you teachers. And for this teacher to write a letter to the commissioner herself based on her own frustration, and she said that it's been 4 years that she knows of the change. No first grader is supposed to be held to the steps of mandated requirements of sixth grade curriculum. Absolutely not. In order for them to be promoted or in order for them to be judged on how smart or not smart they are, because these children are coming home, going and knowing what they know, proud to know what they know, happy to be in school, and coming back saying they wish they never seen school again. Okay, mm-hmm. I have to, let me give the mic over to Professor Jones.
Hello.
Hi there.
Stalo, you brought up some really good points. I just want to follow up on some of them. You know, Katie, when you talk about how a children's curriculum is not matching the actual grade level and so forth, and that the children are being held to a standard of excellence that is above their comprehension at this point, you know, you're talking about a systemic issue. So I think you're correct in, you know, looking at the teachers and saying that the teacher's responsibility in this is minimal because they're instructed to teach the actual statewide curriculums that are placed in front of them. So what is this system doing? The system is setting up to teach our children to get used to failure. When you try to challenge our children with things that are above and beyond their capabilities, you're trying to kill their spirit. Because when a child learns, their spirit grows, their confidence grows. When you place a child or anybody in a predicament that is too incompetent, that is too overbearing, a lot of times people will shut down. And children, if you get children to shut down in the first and second grade, you've practically eliminated a large part of their potential for their future in terms of their future growth and whatever career, whatever endeavor they chose, that they were choosing to head in. Now, we talk about the standardized test. And, you know, I understand that was the information put out, Stalo, that the standardized test was to help teachers understand better ways to, you know, wherever, to help them with their deficiencies. But we also have to understand that we're dealing with an Orwellian system. In an Orwellian system, this is based off of the creator of the novel and then later movie, 1984. You're dealing with a system that tells two stories or has what's referred to as Orwellian doublespeak. And so there are two meanings. There were two agendas behind the creation of the standardized test. The standardized test was pretty much the test put in place to profile our children, to see if our children was susceptible to the teachings and the mechanisms and the changes from these social engineers. Now, when you have children being profiled in every single year, the test is adjusted and so forth, and then you go into these other schools, not this school, particular school we're talking about, the other schools where all of the extracurricular activities are taken out, all of the home ec courses, auto shop, art, acting, things of that nature are taken out. You're creating a permanent slave class because you're killing the creative aspect of learning, which is the most important aspect of learning. Yes. So you're creating a permanent slave class and you're devoiding them of their potential creations and what they can produce. So when we talk about the standardized testing, that's also used to deflate our children because as we know, with testing in the past, it's all relative and it's all biased. If you go back to the SATs, the IQ test, if you go back to that recent book that was written in the 80s called The Bell Curve, that spoke specifically about genetic deficiencies. If you go back to the Darwinian, the practices of Darwinism and the evolution, the theory of his theory of evolution as it relates to children, it always talks about people of darker skin, darker hue, being less intelligent. And then when you have these standardized tests that are designed to get those results, you pretty much have children feeding into the self-fulfilling prophecy that's before them. And when you have all of these things, and then you police officers, metal detectors, to these buildings, to these schools, you have people being handcuffed in rooms. I was in a school that part of the school system itself, it was Community Education Partners. They had a school down in Houston, and the school down in Houston, they had an actual courtroom within the school where children were actually tried by a judge. They had a holding cell. These schools came with practical holding cells. They were designed interiorly like prisons.
Wow.
You're setting our children up, and I'm telling you because I worked in one for 9 years and worked like hell to change the culture and the environment from within that system, and was fought tooth and nail for 9 years to get that system changed. And, you know, to see my students later on and to have them come to me and say, I'm so glad you were there because everything else about their particular program sent us to jail, sent us to the morgue, sent us to early grades. And if it wasn't for you and the things you did, I probably would be dead right now.
Right.
So to have them, you know, talk about that just illustrates the problems that exist in our school systems. So I know we're going to talk about solutions, Katie, a little later on, and I have a few ideas for that as well.
Okay, absolutely. And the one thing I will say, the standardized test is another little additional, let's call it shady practice in my opinion, is that it's not seen by the teachers who teach our kids all year at all. It's not graded by the teachers. It's graded by the state. It's graded by state officials who don't know a damn thing about your child or your child's school until it's election time or until some mandated checklist inspection is due so that they could show their superiors that they're on their game. And more importantly, there's a computer that pretty much runs it through. And if your child didn't mark something dark enough, it's counted as a no answer or a wrong answer.
No, you're absolutely right with that, Katie. And to just touch on that for a second, as an administrator in the school system that actually applied and supplied these tests to our children, none of the information was given to our students so that they could, or to our teachers, so that they could teach and at least show our students some of the information that was going to be involved in these tests. None of it was made prevalent. And I'll tell you another thing, too. Social studies and science was removed in a lot of these testing areas. Social studies and science, they were removed from the testing. In other words, in these particular schools that I worked in, the children weren't tested on social studies or science. They were only tested in math, and reading comprehension.
And now they have this living environment thing for your older children, like the junior high school and up. They have a living environment, a required test to take in midterm. They have social studies now as being part of a mandated promotion criteria. It's ridiculous. And the thing is, like I was saying in a previous school system segment, is this: where do you get off telling my child who's performed at 90s and 93s and 97s that their work all year doesn't mean a damn thing if they happen to freeze on a test and get some answers wrong?
That's absolutely mad. But in the touch on
what Professor just said as well. The group of children that aren't being tested at all, that means they get no reinforcement. It's likely. It's likely that they get no reinforcement in social studies or history in school because the school is teaching to the test anyway. So these are a whole group of children that if you're not giving them social studies and history at home, right? Guess where they're getting it. Guess where they're getting it from? Nowhere. Oh, no, no, they're getting it from
I've been following education as it's applied to black children since Ocean Hill there in Brooklyn, New York, going back in the 70s. And the same discussion goes on over and over again. And when are black people going to understand that these schools are not going to give your children what they need to compete with other people's children? You have to do that yourself. All state constitutions give the local authority, the local community, the authority to set the curriculum to whatever the heck they want it to be. But we sit back and let these school districts and these state boards of education just continue to use black children like commodity, wheat, sugar, rice, and corn. And we have them discussions about, oh, how terrible it is. So, I mean, black society has a lot to, and blacks have created schools that are excellent. And, I mean, I'm just looking at one here, Marcus Garvey, in South Central L.A., where children in the sixth grade use college textbooks and kindergartens. Second grade students are doing algebra. So don't say that they can't do it. There's many examples. But the question is, why come black folks continue to, and not others too, by the way, but blacks in particular continue to fall prey and enjoy this crazy system?
I don't think they're enjoying it at all, Bianchi. I think they really don't know. I just gave an example. They're sending home cover-ups, age-appropriate work for the parents to see, and the parents are believing that they're helping their child along. Meanwhile, their children are being subjected to a whole different curriculum in the classroom, and the parents don't find out about it till they go to these parent-teacher conferences in midterm or second marking period parent-teacher progress term. And then they're seeing a whole different thing. Half of these parents are seeing what the children are reading sitting on the teacher's desk while they're talking about their child's progress.
Right.
Now, I do agree with one thing. A lot of times the parent participation of this generation is much decreased from where we came from. Much decreased. And our parents back then weren't half as close in age to us to understand or have a better understanding of what's going on. But, yes, for those excelling schools that can teach their children to do it, nobody here said the children can't do it. What I'm saying is this. That should be something that, in addition to what they have already achieved with what they're supposed to be able to do, that should be something that challenges their mind above and beyond what they're doing or what they're supposed to be doing. But to have a state mandate that a child nowadays in the first grade must be able to read a fifth grade book, and if they don't, they get failed. That's crap.
I agree with you. But I don't know what to say. I don't get tired of fighting these battles. I don't spend thousands and thousands of dollars of my own money in school districts, taking busloads of, taking caravans of principals, superintendents, and teachers to visit schools that's highly successful. Some of them even public schools. Matter of fact, in this case, it was public schools. The only superintendent that's done something is the present superintendent in St. Louis, Calvin Adams, who let the principal in one traditional school change his school building around. But, you know, people get tired of this stuff, man. I mean, it's just ridiculous.
And that, is the reason why we are continuously getting caught up in the victimization of this whole thing, because we're getting tired, and they know it. They know if they lay back long enough and nobody says enough or they ignore us enough and we back down, that's exactly
right.
Where it's going to go.
Right.
That's where like minds come in, and because that's where you get your fuel, your energy, to take on the struggle, because it is a battle of endurance. here, and that's in that well, the weapon is endurance, and they're choosing to wear us down with these different policies. But Bianca, you said something that I wanted to talk, that I wanted to chime in about when you talked about you asked the question, why are we still allowing it? And I'll give you an answer, and it's not going to be a popular answer. It's because a white man has not said it's okay for us to challenge this system as a whole. And I'm talking about the black community, because if we continue to say that it's wrong, we continue to go to our people and have these conversations, and believe me, everybody that's on this panel, people listening, have gone in those institutions and raised hell and things of that nature, and have gone and spoken to their friends and families about how to address this or what to do to address it, and they're not moving. It's because systemically, historically, unless we have been given permission by Massa, we as a people do not move on anything. And it's unfortunate, but that is the current condition of our community right now. The current condition of our community is we're waiting for Superman to come in and galvanize the force. We're waiting for Malcolm, Martin, Jesus, Muhammad, whomever, to come in and rescue us, when the system is already prepared for that. They even have it documented with the COINTELPRO papers that they're prepared to prevent the rise of the new black messiah. So we're sitting here waiting for somebody that they're not going to let, that they are ready and prepared to defeat while, you know, before he gets there. We are, I'm listening.
I was going to say, I have a little further point on that one. I think that even with that being placed, enough of us causing enough of a trouble, it will eventually we'll get somewhere. And I will say that to the dad, because this is my child. This is my children. These are my children. I'm not going to sit back there and say, I'm going to wait for Superman. And like right. We spoke about when we did the Lavinia Johnson petition, and LaQuay had said that he's not going to sit around waiting for somebody to watch him pick up a broom and then go, oh, I think I should pick up a broom. He's going to do what he has to do, and whoever should join him later, great. Because eventually one becomes two becomes three becomes six. Because people by nature tend to not be the first one to say something, but for those people that are the first step takers, they tend to be more bandwagoners.
Well, you know, Katie, I'm going to tell you something. Now, I was the field coordinator for African Studies Curriculum for the St. Louis Chapter of the National Black United Front. In the front, started these African-centered movements going back in Detroit, Chicago. You know, in Detroit, back in like the 1992, a guy by the name of Clifford Wilson came together to form the Malcolm X Academy. They had an ad hoc committee one Saturday when the temperature was like 25 below zero or something. About 500 black people come out. In Detroit public schools, they used to have 5,000 black people show up at them school board meetings saying, we want a change. Kansas City, 500 black people turned. They did make changes. You had successful schools in Kansas City, whereas some of those schools ranked in the top six in the state of Missouri in academic performance. You know what happened? They closed the damn schools.
Oh,
same thing in Detroit. They closed the schools.
That can't be, because those same people who caused change stood with. I refuse to believe that. I refuse to believe that that much change was made with that much power and unity, and those same unified people remain unified and the schools still closed. I don't see
Katie,
that happening.
You can go and look up the news articles today, just most recently. Matter of fact, the brother in Philadelphia, Malise Asante, and there's another woman that's over in African Center Charter School. I can't think of mother's, a queen something. Her and Asante was part of coming down to Kansas City to help them, the people that wanted to destroy the board, the former DSEG judge, implement a program that wasn't what the people initially done.
I'm going to be able to find out if that group stayed unified in the newspaper article.
Since 1994, Katie, people don't got old. New generations have come on, and these things fall apart. They don't, nothing maintains that long. So the thing is that I'm saying is that black folks want to change their education. Now, there are some good public schools, but when you're in a public school system, they will change your stuff. They will close you down or do whatever they can. And I don't care how well it's performing. Only way you're going to have success in educating your own children, you have to have your own schools. That's it. Anything else, you're throwing the dice.
I actually agree with that 100%. It's funny. I was just on another radio show earlier tonight, and we were talking about community. And the fact of the matter is, we don't have a black community right now. So in order to have a community, you have to control the resources. You have to control what comes in, what goes out. You have to have a semblance of control. And as of right now, the things that we once had our hands in are being shut down. And I saw what the brother was just talking about happened here in Philadelphia in the last 5 years, where schools, high-performance schools, one school I did a few lectures at, Barton High School, was one of the top schools in the city, and they were shut down just last year. And so these things are happening, and the problem is, when you have those groups of support and they're dying off, they get old, and those seeds are not replenished or whatever, we will lose. We do lose. As Dr. Amos Wilson once said, you can lose gains that you have gotten over the years if you don't keep pushing forward in your movements.
Absolutely.
And that's what's happening in a lot of different places all over the country. And
right.
Unless we come together and understand the importance of building the community, the importance of rehiring. We have many teachers within the communities right now that don't have jobs. But we'll pay money to go play the lottery. But we won't pay money to put in to fund our schools or to create our own schools, No other community is going to save us. Although they owe us because we built this country, nobody is going to save us. We're going to have to work five times as hard to get our institutions up and running as any other demographic in this country. We are here designed to be the bottom economic, socioeconomic class, to be fed upon, to be used as mules. And if we don't grasp that concept, then we're going to continue to spin our wheels in the mud, because we have to understand where we are to understand where we're going. And if we continue to think and buy this BS about, we're American citizens, we have as many rights as anybody else, true. We have what's called birthrights, but our rights are not respected in this country. It is written in the Constitution. It is written in different Supreme Court judgments. Our rights are not to be respected in this country, and until we galvanize our community, insulate our communities, until we build our own schools and our own infrastructure, we will not be able to do the things that we wish to, allow our children to have a quality education, allow our children to have a fair shake in life, allow our children to dream outside of the box instead of being confined to a few career choices, things of that nature. We'll always be at the mercy of state systems, school systems, because they're out of our grasp.
Absolutely.
And it's just not the state neither. You got some Negro organizations out there that's just as detrimental and just as toxic to the will of black people, NAACP, Urban League. Anytime you can have anytime that when you have New York deciding to try charter schools and NAACP file lawsuits against them, anytime when blacks are polled and overwhelmingly say they want school choice, and you got the NAACP say, no, you don't want that, then there's a problem there. Blacks need to have, anybody else need to have full choice so they can make determination on the direction that their children go. They need good charter schools. They need good public schools. They need good home schools. And most of all, they need full vouchers so they can pay their way so that their children can have those accesses. And until that comes, we're going to be having these conversations forever because these folks will wait you out. Like the brother said, you die off. Everybody was working with me back in the 90s dead. They did.
The problem with that is we have, Deacon, I'm sorry, I'll get to you in just a minute. Don't lose your thought. I believe that definitely all of you touching on great points. We do need to have our own. We do need to have our own internal answer to ourselves type of community. Okay, that's a hard thing to do right now, but it's not impossible. The other thing that needs to be taught after we achieve this great big mountaintop is we have to teach our generations and the people around us that it's not just achieving it, it's following up and staying with it. And we need to stop going to organizations that are put in place pretending to have our needs in place, such as the NAACP and these long-gone black political activists, okay, like Jesse Jackson, like Al Sharpton. We need to stop going to these people to look for approval. And when they say, no, that's not what you want, you turn back and say, hell yeah, I do. And is it going to be easy? No. But then again, being black never has been. But when it comes down to this particular topic going on tonight, these are my children. These are my children. Forget race at this moment. These are my children. This is a public school system that's promising my children an education. We know what the deal is behind the scenes. If there's money involved, all the other morals and legal standings is out the window. They'll find a way to get around it. But in the meantime, your child's education is being messed with, and that's their primary function. That's the function that they are adhered to and obligated to maintain. Now, it's up to you to sit there and say, this is not what an education is, and I don't like it. And guess what, Chancellor? If you don't do something about it, if you don't at least meet us, if not halfway, all the way, okay, you're not going to be a chancellor next year because I won't let the mayor who chose you be there next year.
Right.
And, Deacon, you were going to say?
Okay, the point I want to make is that with things, the way things are going on with today's society, we have, like in our past leaders, they would not accept some of the things that are going on in today's society, because you have a lot of these people that now that don't realize the position that they that they are in as far as leadership. You have a lot of these young people walking around here now with the attitude, oh, it is what it is, and they're going to do what they want to do. No. Because the leaders, our past leaders and our parents that are no longer here with us, they never would accept that. There's no way they would accept none of the things that are happening in today's society. There will always be somebody to stand up and raise a ruckus or do whatever needed to be done to make sure that we got things that were right. And until we start getting with some of these younger people and instilling in them what has to be done and what should be done and teaching them how the system works, so this way we can use it to our advantage. So right now, they're turning their backs on it and saying, oh, well, it is what it is. No, that really burns me to my core to hear somebody say that, oh, it is what it is. I'm not accepting that.
Neither am I. And the public school system is only getting away with what they're doing because there are less parents active or involved for whatever reason, be it that it's just another notice that comes with the many notices you get, be it that their schedule for as single parents is demanding, be it that they're tired after working all this time and they think that they saw something but they missed it, be it that they believe and trust in the educators that they're sending their kids to, to do the right damn thing. Meanwhile, they're using when the that's the way the my school plays mentality and sneaking in curriculum that doesn't belong in a specific age group and telling your children, don't tell your mother, but you better know this.
Right. And see, I'm in full agreement when it comes to us as a people developing programs in schools of our own, so we have the right to say what will be or what won't be done in, as far as the education of our children.
That's the only way you're going to do it.
But
let me tell you another thing, too. Another culprit that you have out there. See, your politics don't work for you for a simple reason, because you got those teachers' unions, the American Federation of Teachers at the local level, and you got the National Education Association at the national level, and they buy off your politicians. At the state level and at the federal level. You don't believe me? Just start paying attention to it. You got black teachers that's caught up in the system for a salary and pension, that's paying dues, that's going to undermine the wills and wishes of black people who elect folks to go to the state house and go to the federal government to carry out their wishes. They don't do any of that because these other organizations will buy them out and run candidates against them.
And in this case, I'm going to say one thing. I can actually say that I'm happy to see that in the midst of all this garbage, there are teachers that are upset with this and still try to teach like the old school days. I can say that. They don't have a voice politically. They can't say certain things. But if they can say enough or show enough frustration, let me say this. We may not have the financial standing at this moment. We may not have the full awareness of our community at this moment, but we're still parents, and that never changes, no matter what. And our parents' voices go, no matter how high our politician is, no matter how deep their pockets go, no matter how easily sold they can be to the highest bidder, enough noise will make the highest person at least try to figure out what's going on. And in that respect, if that's all you have, when it comes down to your child, you do what you have to do. Maybe we need to stop looking at, like you just said, Pianchi, the NAACP. We know that the colored people in there is just one of the letters in their acronyms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because they're not a colored person organization to save their life, especially when they're run by a white man.
Well, the thing with them is that the people they're supposed to represent is not the ones that's paying the money. It's these corporations that pay the NAACP.
I just
corporations and big businesses. And if they don't do what they tell them to do, then you know what happens. So it's a catch-22.
And you know something? That's a corporation, a member of the corporation. Parents are not. Parents are not members of corporations.
Right.
So they can
but
say
it's
just and
not
do
schools
things.
Schools that parents have control over.
They can say and do things that does not adhere to any corporate anything. So that is where it needs to come from. I really don't give a flying hell about how the white man is oppressing us or anything like that. Enough noise with enough people saying it over and over again until something happens. Okay, get something, even if it's a dent. The least that can happen right now is that it goes back to the old school days where first graders were learning first grade work. And if third grade curriculum was introduced to them, it's because a teacher was in that kid's life enough to say, this child can do this work. Not that you better do this work, whether you know it or not. There's a big
difference. Well, I agree with you on that.
Right.
Thank you. I will say to you that that's what I believe. I don't believe that this is one of those times where we have to say it is what it is. It's never going to get anywhere. They're always going to have the upper hand.
Well,
the hell with that.
I'm not saying that we have to sell. What I'm just giving you information from what I have experienced for the last five decades since '70s, since the Black Power movement. You know, blacks sat in and occupied and took control of USC, University of Southern California, USC, and said they wanted black subjects taught and they wanted black teachers to teach them. This goes back to them. Then when they failed to get African-centered program in public schools, you had another group, the Council of Black Independent Institutions, started their own school system. They had over 80 schools across the country at one point in time. Had them in Philadelphia and New Jersey. Aisha Shule, I think, is one of them. You had another one there in Philadelphia called Martin Luther King or Marcus Garvey. I can't think of the name. But
you might be talking about Sister Claire Muhammad.
Yeah, I tell you, it's
It was Sister Claire Muhammad. I know the school.
Yeah, it's not that black folks can't do it. They have done it, been doing it. But the thing is, it's nowhere near enough. And then once they get your children, just the same way it is in prisons, Katie, once you get a black person in prison, it's hard as hell to get them out, even if they are innocent.
Absolutely. And you know what? Prisons, and I'm going to address something you just said before I bring in our other panelists, is this. Prisons are designed, and especially to the African-American prisoner, to make you want to depend on jailhouse routines. So even when they're freed from whatever sentence they serve, when they come out, they do things subconsciously to make sure they go back. Why? Because as messed up as it is, jail gives you 3 square meals a day. Jail tells you when to wake up in the morning. Jail tells you when you can go play in the yard. Jail has a little honor clique that has certain places you can go, certain groups you can belong to. They have a certain honor code. If you're a rapist, you can forget it when you get there. So, yes, when they go to jail, you're right, it's hard as hell to break them from it. But I will say something else. You know why all of those schools and back in our, and when I was even growing up, and I know I'm a lot younger than you, but when I was growing up, there was more of a black presence in the community. There was more of a black entrepreneurship in the community. There was more of a village in the community. You know why it's not going on anymore? Because that generation dropped the ball on this one. They didn't teach them the same values, endurance, persistence, and all these other things. They came from the direct oppression. They were like, I call my father's generation, that they're just going to serve. Just after the post-slavery movement. Why? Because there was still Jim Crow laws. Because segregation was alive. And legally alive is what I mean. Not this little undercover, cover it up with a legal cop's excuse or whatever the case is. I'm talking about you could walk up and smack a black kid and dare a black man to say something. That was his father. Okay? I'm talking about that. Now, if they could do it, if they can do it, with all that staring them in the face, and it worked for however long it did, they were supposed to take the wand and pass it off and teach them exactly what it was that they did to make it happen. That's what I'm going to say. The reason why we're not doing it is because we weren't taught, and guess what? We got too lazy in the process. Need to bring in our other panelists right now. Welcome to the show, caller. You're on the air.
Good evening, panel, and Lady KD. This is Al Tariq Atkins
called. Hey, Al Tariq, where you
all right. Hey,
you?
Tariq. All right.
How you doing tonight?
Bless you, bro.
Likewise. Okay, I was just listening in, and everybody had some very good points. The one thing that I was thinking of, because as much as you make certain strides here, and I mean, it doesn't have to be based like all on race, but if you look at certain things, if you got like a segment of schools and just think about it, like how advanced, you know, our people were starting to be, starting to get into certain things, you know, be entrepreneurs and things like that. It was always ways that was put in place to neutralize it. If you look at it, the history overall, it was some things that went on, too, that was our fault as well. But, you know, it was always things implemented to help neutralize our movement. And if it was whites involved in it, it didn't matter, as long as it took care of those who the programs that was being in place neutralized. You know, today at these public schools, I heard something, and I knew it was meant for me to hear it. I listened to this station on the AM today. And it was this guy, he was on this radio show. It was like a white radio show on AM. And he said, see, these people, they're just falling for anything. And this communism stuff is going on and talking about Obama and all this stuff he was saying about him. And he said, in these public schools, he said, they're the fit. He said, I've been saying for like 30 or 40 years that the people should have been taking their kids out of these public schools because they were doomed anyway. And then, like, certain ways they'll say coded things, like saying, like, I guess when integration came in and stuff like that, those were the different problems. He was, like, saying they were setting themselves up for failure anyway in so many words. And then over time you see it play out, but it's not just, you know, but everybody has to have their share in it. And like how y'all said, you know, some of the grown-ups drop the ball as well. But it's not just their fault. We are in a system. And if everything is about education, and if you just look at it, that we're the superpower that polices everybody else, and we're so morally sound. But how can you be a morally sound people if you don't have an educationally sound nation?
Absolutely, which is brings me back to a couple of points and something I want to touch on that you said. As much as you said, you're absolutely right. They did drop the ball. It's not all their fault, of course, because we are grown and there are certain things we see and we know it's not right and we know we don't like what it feels like. But part of it is laziness and part of it is fear. Now, the other hand, you just said, a lot of the things were neutralized back then in place. But guess what? For some reason, our ancestors, even being half educated and half technologically savvy, okay, still did it. They still, look at all of us on this panel. How many of you remember Big Mama going down to the school when a teacher talked to you out of place? Come on, raise your hands. Don't all get silent on me. How many of you remember your grandmother going down in her rollers and her big old embarrassing gown to go and get in a teacher's butt who either didn't send home homework, said something to you that was out of place. You spoke about it yourself, Altari, with your mother going down there to say something to a teacher. You tell me how many parents do that now. How many parents are even aware until after your child has gotten about 3 or 4 notices put in their file and it got too much for the teacher? Okay, nowadays the parents need to get involved, period. We're not under any corporate restrictions because this is our child, and while they put it on paper that the parents have a voice, they try to reel that in for those that don't say a word.
Well, this, you know, a lot of these parents don't know, Katie. I mean, the kids that graduated just this past June, in the previous 12 years, they was never taught to be a parent. They was never taught the civic and the civil responsibility. They don't know themselves. They are a victim of the very thing that their children are caught up in today, and they don't know, have a clue of what the hell's going on.
And that's because the generation before them dropped the ball. That is because that is it. Now, like I said, we are grown. There are choices that we make. There are things that we can't put on our parents, even if they weren't as up to par as they should be. But on the other hand, like you said, if they don't know, they're not going to be able to perform properly.
Hell, you go to school board meetings,
they
make you sign in and write your questions on paper, and if they don't like what your question is reading, they won't even call you.
There's another factor,
indeed,
too, and we spoke about
what?
It a little
I'm
earlier.
Sorry. One second, Professor. You're absolutely right. And if they don't call you and you know that it's been 2 or 3 days since you wrote that question, then your ass needs to get up and go down there and figure out why.
No, that's at the meeting. Before when you go to a meeting, Katie, they say those who have questions, write your questions on a piece of paper and pass them up. Well, that's crazy. They give you 3 minutes. What kind of crazy mess is that?
Well,
and as I said before, if they don't like your question, if they think your question is too radical, however, they won't even call upon it. They'll just throw it to the side.
In the PTA meetings out here in New York, it's not a question on paper, nothing. We raise our hands and we voice our opinion. Now, the problem is, with that type of power, not enough bodies are in place to have the voice. And that's where it differentiates from the generation we grew up in, okay? Where our parents were there, whether they understood the curriculum or not. I know a lot of us talk about Tyler Perry, pretty much his movies are more of the Black oppression or the depression side of everything, but think real hard about any Madea movie you've ever seen. Madea is as country as they come, right? But when it comes down to school and all the people she raised up with, she definitely did that old school involvement. She knew that that child didn't go to school. She knew if that child was acting up in school, whether the child came home and said it or not. And after she
Let me ask you a question.
Opportunity, 1 second.
You're in New York.
One second. After she gave the child the opportunity to tell it themselves, she let them know that she was already there and already knew the answer. Now, you were going to say?
You in New York. You
yes.
know school. You know school district 79, right?
Yes.
Your superintendent name was Levy, right?
He's not my district's. He used to be.
He's not there now.
This
guy by the name of Levy, a Jew, was over that district. You had an incident where you had a teacher by the name, a black teacher by the name of Yah Santiwa. And she was teaching her children in drama and art, not to black males, not to never take on a disparaging role. Okay, so she was away from school, and they had a substitute white teacher, Jewish teacher coming there, and he put together a play and wanted the black kids to play the role of a petty thief, and they said, no, we're not going to do that. He asked them why. He said, because our teacher said we're not supposed to play those roles. They put on a movement to have that teacher fired, which they did. We even got involved in it on her behalf all the way here in St. Louis. That's the kind of stuff that goes on.
And nobody, Bianchi, nobody is denying that. You can't possibly deny or ignore that that is going on. My thing is, regardless to all of that, you still have to fight. You can't get tired and die out. You still have to fight. And for your children, you will always be their parents. And while they're in the minor role, okay, meaning a legal minor, you are the person they depend on. Okay, so what are you going to say? Well, I didn't try it here. Well, I don't want there. It's always going to be like that. Slavery existed long before anything else. So slavery has been in place long before school districts were even integrated. So what are we going to say? Literally, these are your children, and you have a voice. Whether they let you believe you do or not is not the issue. The issue is you need to say what you have to say. Whether you feel it's being ignored or not, you go back again. Too many excuses. And I'm not saying that we're going to be successful with it, but enough noise was made. And for those who think that heard it, it'll sting their mind for some time. These are your kids, regardless of what, regardless of how many schools are closing down. You know what? Maybe that fight needed another kick. Maybe that fight needed another kick. Maybe you should take that fight, figure out where it failed, and add on to what needed to go on. These are your children. And if you're going to start by not showing up in the one place that is in place for you, which is the PTA meetings, then you're already setting up your kids to help them fail them.
I believe
Professor, you were starting to say something.
Oh, somebody's about to say something.
Professor, you were starting to say something.
All right.
Well, what I see with this problem is we need to do more in terms of strategizing real tangible moves so we can have some real tangible change. Because if we continue to throw rocks at this stone builder, we may get a crack, we may do a dent, we may have a dent there, but we're not going to change this system that's constantly. This is not by accident that these schools are failing our children, that
no,
these schools are
design.
Failing our children. Yeah, this is not an accident. This has been set up. I mean, when you look at our history and all the different laws have been put in, and policies have been put in place to set us back, keep setting us back. You have to recognize that until we break free of our dependency on this system, these conversations are going to continue. We're going to continue to talk about different ways to protest. We're going to continue to talk about different ways to address the school system. But the school system is not designed to teach us. These schools are designed to keep the rich rich, to keep the powerful powerful, and to keep the enslaved enslaved. So we are sitting here debating on how can we improve our status as higher-level slaves when we really, and I understand, the crisis is now. The children are in school now. So we want to do something now. But the problem is, while we're doing something now, we're spending an enormous amount of energy to make minimal progress when we need to be as efficient as possible so that we can maximize our progress and maximize our opportunities and maximize our versions of change in a way that's so effective that we're no longer talking about how this is going. I'll give you an example. The Jewish community for here in Pennsylvania to have their curriculum, to have the Holocaust
taught in all the schools.
Taught in all of the schools in the state of Pennsylvania. The Holocaust didn't even happen here. But yet still, the same, and like you said earlier, Pianke, these so-called groups, these black boule groups that we're talking about, the NAACP and all these other so-called watchdog groups for the black community, totally sold us up the river when it came to instilling African history into these same schools.
You're absolutely right.
So,
And you said, and not to cut you off, you said that the children had to pass a test. They had to take African history. Then you said that those that didn't want to take it did not even have to take it. And they still came after y'all like the vicious dogs.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the fight that's currently going on right now in this state. So we have to, the Jewish community, in addition to that, they teach their children in synagogue every Saturday their history. They teach them every Saturday. So why can't we teach our damn children every Saturday? We're fussing and fighting about what they should do. What about what the hell should we do for our children? Why aren't we having Saturday morning meetings with our children? Why are we still concerned about being turned up on Friday night so we're turned out on Saturday and we can't go
come
to
on,
heaven
come on.
And address our children? Why are we always talking about them? It goes back to what we said earlier. We have got to stop giving a damn about what the white man gives us permission to do.
Amen.
And that's my point about
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to address something that you said, Professor. Okay, yes, we need to do something. We do, but I will say this: it'll start with what we know is in place, with what we know our obstacles are, with what we know we don't have at the moment that they do. We need to start by making small, relevant, and efficient changes so that big progress can happen. Like you said, the children are in school now. We need to do something now. Now, if we can at least instill two things. Number one, make something happen where our boys can walk while black and not be shot down. Okay? I think that the last time we had this conversation, matter of fact, I think it was you, Bianchi, who said, what do you think is going to happen, that they're going to embrace us and love us? I'm not expecting that. I'm expecting that I can tell my son, you can go to the corner store, dress in braids, and wear a hoodie, and come back with Arizona and Skittles, and still be alive when you get here. So if we can make that happen, that's a change. If we can make our children be able to be fairly judged in progress in schools, we've made two changes and it gave us room to continue working on the big overall stuff. The problem is everybody in a position of nothing or nowhere, self-inflicted partially and outside inflicted on a majority, okay? We're still trying to go for the big mountaintop right now. We can't do that. We can't go charging in and bringing those people down. This is not the Roman days. And I don't think black people ever had a Roman day era. What I'm saying to you now is that this is what was in our control. You are a parent. Your child's education is being blatantly prejudiced. Get the hell in the schools, into your parent-teacher meetings, into your parent-teacher association meetings, and say something until something happens. Now. Do that now.
Yeah.
Do that now. Yeah. Stop looking for the mountaintop because it doesn't belong to you at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
I told you before, a mouse never gets into your house by charging through the front door. They never do.
You know what I was reading and it just came to my mind, and it was like when I was looking, I was just looking through scripture. And it gave me like an outline of things that I already had known, but it just like intensified. And I was like, man, I said, all through here, it talks about poverty and stuff. And I said, I said, well, if it's always talking about poverty and how poor people one day will be given a certain thing, I said, then we got to get educated and what we need to know to be able to get these things as well. I said, and I think too many of us is waiting for somebody to come down and change things for us that we can change right now. Because it's all through there about poverty. It's a lot of things in Scripture about poverty and about people who have money and they're just jerking the poor. And it's like it was designed in there, and it plays out when you look at things in today's society. And I'm like, man, you know, when can people that's in poverty can get a fair shake? And the only thing I could come up with was if we get up and we start getting education, start getting knowledge, and stop being so ignorant, and those of us who are willingly ignorant, and start making moves. We can't be like it tells you. You have to be like learn the ways of an ant. They move together. And until we
right.
start moving together and know what we're moving for and what we're up against, that's the only way we'll ever be able to conquer, you know, for what we need, for our families and for our community and in society. If we don't take those steps, then we'll just be the slugger. And people will walk over us, and they'll do whatever to us, as has been being done quite some time. I'll be sad when I see certain people that's been through the struggle, you know, that's been with certain things, with King and all that, and then they see how a lot of things, you hear certain ones that don't say, things are really, a lot of things, we made certain strides, but it's a lot of things that, you know, really didn't change. You know, and I'm like, man, I know that's the truth. And they was
that's
there
cool.
fighting for these things. And it's like the steps they made, they took a step forward, and it's almost like two steps backwards. Yeah, three steps backwards. That's right. So, you know, until we use, I guess as Malcolm said, our intelligence, we always going to be treated, you know, improperly. You know,
that's
and if we
on Drexel Avenue.
Well, then once we learn how to treat ourselves and know what we're up against, really know, and act accordingly with what we know and start pooling our resources, start supporting one another, nobody else is going to support us, and they're showing it. And if they're showing it and we don't do nothing about it, that's our fault.
Absolutely, and you just touched on tonight's topic pretty much of what you just said. You know, you're speaking about how everything you read is about poverty, and we need to get educated. Well, parents, education is the topic tonight. Get down to your child's school, pop up on the teacher, look at what they're offering your child in class, and see if it matches what your child takes home every night. Now, Deacon, you said you saw the post. You saw the two pictures I made by comparison. You tell me how it's equal that you see your child at the homework table with Pam likes to ride a bike with your six-year-old. Pam likes to ride a bike. What does Pam like to ride? Then you go and you look at what they're getting in class, and you see E.B. White with a pile of coins and all this other stuff. And you tell me if the two are equal. And then tell me what you're supposed to do about that. You're supposed to sit back and go, oh, I just don't understand this stuff. If you can't understand
you,
it, what the hell do you think your six-year-old is going to do?
You know, they go into this thing called Common Core. I remember when they had the Our Basic Skills, Gold 2000, No Child Left Behind, this
garbage.
Other thing just before that. Now they're on Common Core. And black children... And I only talk about black children. I know other ethnic groups have problems. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I only experience with black children. But
yes.
They mastered the Our Basic Skill test. But you know what they done? They changed the test and went to another one.
Mm.
Exactly what they done.
Uh-huh.
In the 90s, I went around the country sitting in high-performance African-American, all-black schools, videotaping every class. I was there in Philadelphia. The schools don't change now. You got a school there on Drexel Road, and that school wasn't there when I was there. It was nothing called a different name. And I was in Los Angeles for like from Tuesday until Friday, in Nation House in Washington, D.C., up in Detroit with Inseroma, Paul Robeson, and Timbuktu, in Chicago with the Betty Shabazz, and you know, I was in Milwaukee. Man, it's just a shame what they've done in Milwaukee. You need to get that book called Not Yet Free at Last and read that story. They had it in Milwaukee that you couldn't have black children. If you was in an all-black neighborhood, you still couldn't have no more black teachers than what blacks were in as a percentage in the whole damn state.
What?
That's exactly what they had. If you had, if you was in an all-black school and all-black neighborhood, if blacks made up 15% of the population in the state of Milwaukee, you could only have 15% of black teachers in that school.
Crazy.
Wow.
Okay.
Well, when you think about the teachers' unions and the percentage of people in those unions, and I worked within that union, so I know about the percentage of people in those unions is majority Jewish run. So all the concern is about maintaining Jewish control in terms of the school board, in terms of the academic system, which is partially why we have the situation with the curriculum for this upcoming school year with the whole Holocaust thing down here in Pennsylvania. And, you know, these systems are set up to destroy black children. And I know we always want to say, well, I don't want to do the race thing. I don't want to play the race card. Guess what? The race card came into existence the second you woke up, the second you were born. The race card is on the deck. You know, and it's funny how the technology works, where they have, the dominant society has gotten us so shaken up about using race as a determining factor that we now try to police ourselves when addressing situations when it comes to race. And that's total bullshit. But, you know, that's another story for another day. But the bottom line is everything about the system, everything about this country is based on race. And it's based on maintaining the status quo of who's in power, who's in control, and who gets victimized. And that's why we have got to understand where we are, what we need to do in terms of fixing our system from within. And it's simple. It's really simple. When we go into these schools, we need to go en masse. We need to go en masse. So when you go, we need to go to where these parents are. Since you can't get, we can't get together and find them, let's go to the local bar on Friday night and pass out flyers. Because that's where the hell they all are. Let's go to the local bars where they're turned out, where, you know, where everybody is, the corner bar, the hole in the wall that everybody's hanging in. Let's go down there and set up and pass out flyers about the meeting the next day and keep going down there, passing out flyers. Let's go to where they are until they get sick of seeing us where they are, and then they come to where we are so that we can get them together to give a damn about their children. And then we'll have enough so that we can start to build up that way in addressing the school system as it currently stands. But until we get to the point where we're actually the ones funding our own schools, until $300 sneakers are not as important to us as, you know, building for our children's future, until these video games are, you know, a secondary concern to our children's futures, then we're going to continue to have these conversations. Now, I'm not being a pessimist. I'm just being a realist about this. I'm an optimist in saying that I was with a group of children tonight that are about changing out in Chester, Pennsylvania, which if you do any research about Chester, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it was a poor district.
Yeah, it's one of the poorest districts in the country. You know, but these children are out there, the Chester Youth Council are out there putting together a summit for I believe it's going to be on May 16th, if I'm not mistaken. And these children put together this committee. It's a children is run by and fueled by the children because they want to change the perceptions of black children in Chester. So when y'all see stuff like that, I know that there's hope for us.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, once they get them brothers in prison, I was in a barbershop today and young man came in to get a haircut. I think he's trying to get a job. This brother was a very handsome young man. I guess he's about in his 30s. I think he's just getting out of prison. But the things he was talking about to the barber, you know, he didn't have money to pay for the haircut. So the barber told him, That's all right. Come back when you can. I feel so bad listening to his story. You know, nobody wants to hire him, and he's trying to take care of his family. But this is just totally ridiculous that our people – I mean, shouldn't we at some point in time get sick and tired of being dead last and everything?
Yeah, no, that's right.
Sick and tired of being sick and tired. You're absolutely right, Bianchi. Aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Aren't we sick of it? Aren't we sick of being expected to be turned down? Aren't we?
Well, hell no. We're going to go out and get turned up.
Right.
Not us.
That's the new big thing now. Yeah, let's go turn up. Turn up, yeah. Why don't you turn down some of this stuff so we can get turned around?
Mm-hmm.
There comes a point in time where we have to acknowledge the struggle, and we still have to realize that we have to take the ball into our own hands. There comes a point in time where while we understand where all of this is coming from and acknowledge that it's not going anywhere, we have to figure out now what do we do. That's where the solutions come in. That's where people like Tommy Sotomayor has no purpose. Why do we continue to need people to say, like you say, Bianchi, having these conversations in a circular motion over and over and over again, now listen to the solutions and stop plugging up your ears so that you can go, yeah, but if we tried that back in 1973, that didn't happen. Well, it's 2014, people. They didn't have trains and planes and automobiles in certain eras.
Not until those aliens came down. But let's, you know, Katie, you're talking about solutions, right? Okay, I just wanted to throw a little, just lighten it up a little bit. But,
yeah.
You know, we're talking about solutions, and some of the solutions are right in front of us. You know, like
right.
You said, I'm a teacher. I'm a teacher with time. You know, if we open up a building, we open up a local boys club or whatever, I'd be willing to go in there 2-3 days a week. In fact, a friend of mine is holding a program this summer, and I know that I'm going to be volunteering there at least 3 times a week teaching history to our children. So, you know, these are some of the things we can do. We could homeschool our children.
Absolutely.
En masse. Not only homeschool. Think about it like this. We can take our children out. We can all, it's just community-wise, buy a house in one community and set it up with classrooms in every room and have our children homeschooled and supervised by retired teachers who can't afford to live off their pension, you know, and
right.
teach our children. And that way we can influence the curriculum. We can influence what's that. Listen, I'm seeing that happen here in Philadelphia and here in the suburbs. I'm seeing places where people are taking control and taking the power out of the school district's hands. Because just like Al Tariq was talking about, and I know particularly which show he was talking about, he was listening to. You listen to that Prison Planet show? Alex Jones. I know what you're talking about because, you know, Those right wingers are also fed up with the school system because they are informed about the true agenda of the school systems and what they're setting up. So they're pulling their children out too. And
I want to just touch on the homeschooling situation for 1 minute because there's only a few minutes left in the show. But I want to say this: the reason why a lot of people in our community don't go to homeschooling because they're misinformed about what the whole system is. And not only that, the propaganda for the government who's trying to keep the public schools open, and we know what that's about, is the funding that comes from it or comes to it, is this. People tend to think that when you say homeschool means you have to do it yourself. And that's not the situation. There are people who are actually homeschooling organizations that do it for you.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And
Nebraska's
see,
doing
this,
it. Oklahoma's
to,
doing it.
It's up to us to get that information out there. And it's also up to us to let them know that it's okay to ask questions. It's okay to be intelligent. It's okay to not have to wait for the master to say it's okay. It's okay to do it without his permission. And we have
right.
to get them to that point where, you know, understanding, listen here, Negro, this is a big responsibility, so you need to wake the hell up, and you need to stop turning the snooze button on, because it's happening right here in front of you.
To your children, your kids,
exactly.
Your speed, your offspring, to your legacy, you are the person that needs to step up. This is not a government thing. It's not a government thing to the point of them coming in to really give a damn about what's going on. It's up to you to let them know that you're pissed off with it, period. It's up to you. I will say that every single one of you tonight has offered some wonderful, wonderful, wonderful input. Every single one of you has touched on the pros and cons of a lot of things, of the ins and outs of what's going on. And you know something? As much as we might agree to disagree or go at it at some point in time, I believe that all of us being here means that we have a common ground for some reason. Wake up. And believe it or not, the live panel on this show in particular has been growing by segment. So people are listening. So people are listening because something about what we speak about is touching them. Even the little undercover trolls that's calling with unidentified numbers, listening in to get whatever little information they're going to get to try to stop the troublemakers. I know all about you, too. I'm seeing you right here, right now. But I will say this. Okay? I will say this. We have to stand up and be parents. We are our children's protectors. After God comes parent, and that's the way it goes. We are responsible for taking care of them till they're old enough to be parents themselves. And that fight can never end. We can never get tired. We can never drop the ball. It happened to us, and look where we wound up. Now,
yes.
Friday at 10:30, I'm going to be speaking on the black leaders and organizations and beacons that have failed us. And I will be calling them by name, and I will be letting them know exactly what it is that they promised and did not deliver on.
Well, that sounds juicy.
Okay,
wow.
And for those of you who have been around since the inception of these people, kindly call in and voice your concerns. And then after we do the bitching, let's do the solution. And let's see what happens. If we're not going to be able to storm that mountaintop, people. Talking about what we already know is going on is never going to go anywhere, is out there just in a closeted fashion. Listen, we know it. We know we're the last of the race or the only race that didn't get reparations, that's never going to be given that shot if we ask them for it. So now, let's save one of two weekend clubbing days and see how much money you'll have at the end of the month to actually do something progressive with it. And like you said, Professor, when the $300 sneakers no longer become what we deem a necessity, let's see where that gets us. So until Friday night, everybody, be blessed, be a blessing, make a difference, keep fighting, don't lay down, and definitely don't help the system that's failing our kids fail our kids. So God bless you all, and I will see you on Friday night.
All right.
Good
night, everyone.
That's it.
On the Edge, we'll talk about real issues.